Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really pivotal case for anyone diving into environmental law, especially the power you have as future lawyers to protect our environment through citizen suits. We're zeroing in on Sierra Club v. Cedar Point Oil Co., a Fifth Circuit decision from 1996.
Mm-hmm.
This case isn't just about one company. It really lays bare how the Clean Water Act empowers individuals and organizations to act when pollution threatens our waterway.
Exactly. This deep dive will take you through the specifics of Cedar Point's unpermitted discharge of produced water into Galveston Bay and the Sierra Club's subsequent legal challenge. What makes this case so instructive, I think, is how it clarifies fundamental aspects of the Clean Water Act.
Right.
From the very definition of a pollutant to the, critical importance of following legal procedures.
Okay, so to set the stage, what exactly happened in Galveston Bay? What's the core of this story?
Well, from 1991 to 1994, Cedar Point Oil Company was releasing a significant amount, we're talking 500 to 1,200 barrels every day of produced water directly into Galveston Bay.
Wow, that's a lot.
It is. Now, for those who might not be familiar, produced water is a toxic byproduct of oil extraction. Think of it as a cocktail of briny water mixed with various chemicals and other unwanted substances that come up from the well along with the oil.
And the crucial point here is that they were doing this without the proper authorization, right? What kind of permissions are we talking about in this situation?
Precisely. Under the Clean Water Act, the cornerstone for controlling water pollution is the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Permit, or NPDES.
NPDES.
Right. This permit is essentially a license that dictates what pollutants a facility can discharge into navigable waters, how much, and under what conditions. The CWA makes it unequivocally illegal to discharge pollutants without one. It's a strict liability offense.
Strict liability.
Right. Yeah. If the discharge happens and there's no permit, there's a violation. Simple as that. In Cedar Point's situation, they did apply for a permit in 1992, but they continued their discharges while they were waiting for it to be issued. The court's stance was firm. No permit means no legal right to discharge.
So when the government didn't immediately step in, that's where the citizen suit provision of the Clean Water Act comes into play, allowing groups like the Sierra Club to take action. Why is this such a powerful tool?
Section 505 of the Clean Water Act is a really significant mechanism. It empowers private citizens and organizations like the Sierra Club to sue for violations of the act when the relevant government agencies, for whatever reason, aren't taking enforcement action.
Like a backup enforcement mechanism.
You could say that. This provision acts as a vital safety net, ensuring that the goals of the Clean Water Act aren't undermined by inaction. It's about giving a voice to those directly affected by pollution.
But there's always the legal concept of standing the right to bring a lawsuit in the first place. How did the Sierra Club demonstrate to the court that they had a sufficient stake in this issue to sue Cedar Point?
That's a key strategic consideration in, any citizen suit. The Sierra Club had to prove that they or their members had suffered a concrete and particularized injury that was fairly traceable to Cedar Point's discharges, and that a favorable court decision could actually remedy that injury. They submitted evidence in the form of affidavits from their members who use Galveston Bay for various recreational and educational activities, things like canoeing, bird watching, and simply observing the natural environment.
So people actually using the bay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. These members detailed how the pollution from Cedar Point's produced water negatively impacted their ability to enjoy these activities and raised concerns about the overall health of the bay.
And that was enough for the court to grant them the right to sue? Just the impact on their enjoyment?
Yes, it was. The Fifth Circuit applied the fairly traceable standard. Now, what's important for, future lawyers to grasp is that the Sierra Club didn't have to prove that Cedar Point's discharges were the only cause of pollution in Galveston Bay.
Right. That's often a hurdle.
It can be. They simply needed to demonstrate a reasonable likelihood that Cedar Point's discharges contributed to the pollution that specifically harmed their members' use and enjoyment of the bay. The fear of pollution diminishing their recreational and educational experiences was considered a tangible enough injury to establish standing.
So even the fear counts.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So for you future lawyers, remember that demonstrating direct impact on individuals' use of the environment can be a powerful strategy in citizen suits.
Okay, so the Sierra Club has the standing to sue, and Cedar Point was discharging without a permit, but Cedar Point tried to argue that the produced water they were releasing shouldn't even be classified as a pollutant requiring a permit.
Yeah.
What was their logic, and how did the court respond to that?
Cedar Point's argument was essentially that because the EPA hadn't, at that time, issued specific regulations or effluent limitations tailored specifically to produced water from oil and gas extraction, it shouldn't fall under the Clean Water Act's definition of a pollutant that necessitates an NPDES permit. Mm. However, the Fifth Circuit soundly rejected this line of reasoning.
How so?
They pointed directly to the very broad definition of pollutant within the Clean Water Act itself, which explicitly includes terms like industrial waste and chemical waste.
Just broad category.
Very broad. The court reasoned that produced water, being a direct byproduct of an industrial process oil extraction and containing a variety of chemicals, clearly fit within this broad statutory definition.
So the absence of specific EPA rules for produced water didn't give Cedar Point an automatic exemption or a loophole.
Not at all. The court made it clear that the fundamental prohibition against discharging pollutants without a permit, as laid out in the statute, stands independently of whether the EPA has created specific regulations for that particular type of waste. While EPA regulations can certainly provide more detailed guidance, they don't override the core statutory requirement. What's fascinating here is that the CWA actually has very narrow exceptions, explicitly excluding certain oil and gas-related materials from the definition of pollutant under very specific circumstances.
Oh, so the Act does mention oil and gas specifically, just not produced water in this way.
Right. The court used this to infer that Congress intended to regulate other oil and gas byproducts, like produced water, that weren't on that short list of exclusions. So for you, this highlights that even without a specific regulation on point, the broad language of the statute itself can be incredibly powerful.
Right. That's a crucial distinction. So Cedar Point was found to be in violation. What were the consequences? I remember seeing a significant penalty mentioned.
Yes. The district court initially levied a penalty of $186,070 against Cedar Point, and the Fifth Circuit ultimately upheld this amount.
Okay. How did they arrive at that number?
The calculation of this penalty took into account several factors. A key consideration was the economic benefit that Cedar Point had gained by delaying or avoiding the investment in necessary pollution control technologies and the ongoing costs associated with complying with the Clean Water Act over those years of unpermitted discharge.
So it's not just about punishing the polluter, but also about ensuring that companies don't gain a financial advantage by breaking environmental laws, making it not profitable to pollute.
Precisely. The courts look at the severity of the violation, the company's past record of compliance, any good faith efforts they made to comply or lack thereof, and their financial resources, among other things. In Cedar Point's case, the length of time they were discharging without a permit and what appeared to be a lack of proactive steps to rectify the situation seemed to weigh heavily in the court's decision.
Hmm.
This penalty serves a dual purpose. It acts as a punishment for the past violation and, perhaps more importantly, as a deterrent to prevent future violations by Cedar Point and other companies in similar situations.
Now, this case also involved a procedural element, the exclusion of Cedar Point's expert witnesses. That sounds like a potentially significant blow to their defense. What exactly led to that?
It was a critical point. During the discovery phase of litigation, there are strict rules governing when parties must disclose information about their expert witnesses they intend to call at trial.
Right, the deadlines.
Exactly. This includes providing detailed reports outlining their testimony, their qualifications, and the basis for their opinions. Cedar Point failed to meet the court's established deadlines for providing these crucial expert reports.
Just missed the deadline?
Apparently so. As a consequence of this failure to comply with the court's procedural rules, the district court made the decision to exclude those expert witnesses from being allowed to testify at trial.
And Cedar Point challenged that decision on appeal as well. I assume they would.
They did. The Fifth Circuit reviewed the district court's decision on the exclusion of expert witnesses using a specific four-factor test. This test examines, first, the importance of the excluded testimony to the case. Second, the potential prejudice to the opposing party.
Prejudice to the Sierra Club, in this case.
Right. Prejudice if the testimony were allowed despite the late disclosure. Third, the possibility of addressing that prejudice by granting a continuance or some other remedy. And fourth, the reason provided by the party for their failure to comply with the discovery order in the first place.
And how did Cedar Point fare when their failure to disclose was examined under those four factors? What was their excuse?
Not well at all. The Fifth Circuit acknowledged that the expert testimony might have had some relevance to the case. However, they also noted that Cedar Point's justification for missing the court-imposed deadlines for disclosure was quite weak and didn't demonstrate what the court would consider good cause for the delay.
So, not a good enough reason.
Essentially, no. Given the potential unfairness, the prejudice that the Sierra Club would face if they were suddenly confronted with new expert testimony late in the litigation process, and the lack of a compelling explanation for Cedar Point's failure to comply with the rules, the Fifth Circuit concluded that the district court had not abused its discretion in excluding Cedar Point's experts.
Wow.
This really underscores a fundamental principle in litigation. You have to play by the rules, and procedural missteps can have very significant consequences for your case, even if you believe you have strong substantive arguments.
Absolutely. It sounds like even the most compelling legal arguments can be undermined by a failure to follow proper procedure. There was also a note about the injunction in this case being modified during the appeal process.
Yes, that's an interesting development that highlights the dynamic nature of legal remedies. After the district court initially issued an injunction ordering Cedar Point to stop discharging produced water without a permit, and while the case was being appealed to the Fifth Circuit, the EPA actually issued Cedar Point an NPDES permit.
Oh.
So they finally got the permit.
They did. In light of this new regulatory development, the district court modified its original injunction. The modified order acknowledged that Cedar Point now had a permit, but still mandated that they fully comply with all the terms and conditions of that newly issued permit.
So still under court supervision, basically.
In a way, yes. The Fifth Circuit ultimately affirmed this modification, recognizing the district court's ability to adapt its orders to reflect changing circumstances while still ensuring adherence to the Clean Water Act's requirements.
So bringing it all together, what are the really crucial legal takeaways from Sierra Club v. Cedar Point Oil that future environmental lawyers should have firmly in mind?
Well, there are several key principles that this case really drives home. First and foremost, it powerfully demonstrates the vital role and effectiveness of citizen suits as a mechanism for enforcing environmental laws, particularly when government agencies might not be taking immediate action.
The citizen watchdog role. Exactly. Second, it strongly reinforces the concept of strict liability under the Clean Water Act. If you discharge a pollutant without the required permit, it's a violation, regardless of your intent, or whether there are specific regulations tailored to that particular discharge.
And the definition of what constitutes a pollutant is quite expansive, isn't it? That seems really key here.
Precisely. The court's interpretation in this case underscores the broad reach of the Clean Water Act's definition of pollutant. Just because the EPA hasn't specifically created regulations for a particular waste stream doesn't automatically exempt it from the permitting requirements if it otherwise fits the general definition of industrial or chemical waste, for example.
So you have to look beyond just specific EPA rules.
Definitely. This means you need to think broadly about potential pollutants, even those not specifically listed in regulations.
And the procedural aspects of litigation are just as important as the substantive law. That expert witness issue seems like a big deal.
Absolutely. The exclusion of Cedar Point's expert witnesses serves as a stark reminder of the critical importance of adhering to all procedural rules, especially those concerning discovery and the disclosure of expert witness information. Missing deadlines and providing inadequate information can severely weaken your case, regardless of the strength of your underlying legal arguments.
A hard lesson learned there.
Indeed. Finally, the case reiterates that establishing standing in environmental litigation can be based on demonstrating aesthetic or recreational harm to individuals, and the fairly traceable standard doesn't require proving that the defendant's actions were the sole cause of the environmental damage. Just a contributor.
So when we look at the bigger picture, what does this case really tell us about the landscape of environmental law and its enforcement? What's the sort of the 30,000-foot view?
This case really highlights the strength and the teeth embedded within the Clean Water Act. It demonstrates that citizens have a significant and legally recognized ability to hold polluters accountable, even in situations where specific regulations might be lacking or where government enforcement isn't immediate.
Right.
It underscores that the fundamental obligation to obtain a permit before discharging pollutants is paramount, and that companies can't easily sidestep this responsibility by pointing to perceived regulatory gaps. Plus, it's a clear and compelling lesson in the necessity of meticulous legal practice and a deep respect for court procedures.
Exactly. For all the law students listening, Sierra Club v. Cedar Point really hammers home the idea that the language of the statutes themselves carries significant weight, sometimes even before specific regulations are in place. It also underscores that mastering the rules of civil procedure is every bit as crucial to effective advocacy as understanding the core principles of environmental law.
Agreed. This case serves as an excellent illustration of how the Clean Water Act empowers citizens to act as environmental watchdogs and how the courts interpret and apply those crucial powers. It's a foundational case in many ways.
So as you continue your exploration of environmental law, we strongly encourage you to delve deeper into the Clean Water Act's citizen suit provision itself. That's 33 U.S.C. Section 1365. And also to familiarize yourselves with the Fifth Circuit's four-factor test for the exclusion of expert witnesses. These are practical tools and legal concepts brought vividly to life by cases like this one.
Definitely worth looking up.
Now, let's consider this. Given this broad definition of pollutant and the power of citizen suits, what are the potential implications for addressing emerging environmental concerns and regulating pollutants that aren't yet specifically on the EPA's regulatory agenda? How might this precedent influence future environmental litigation involving novel or less understood substances? That's something to really think about as you move forward. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.